You're listening to the Vox Media Podcast Network.
Hello there, as my former colleague Sean Alshadi would start these shows. And I'm going to look at the camera this time because I can't tell you how many people commented that I don't look at the camera enough because I'm always looking at the questions, my Skype, and not at the camera. So I'm looking at the camera this time. But, of course, this is Jose Youngs. Joining me this week on the A-side over here at MMAfighting.com is my very good friend, Anthony Walker of Sure Dog. He's been on the show before, but that was, as Esther Lynn calls it, the extra live A-side live chat when we're both there in the same room together. But Anthony Walker is making his debut via the magic of Skype.
Edition.
The exclusive Anthony Walker, live from L.A. He's joining us via Skype. I'm great to have him. He's supposed to be on a few times before. Things, guests, and whatnot kind of threw a wrench into that. But he is here with us. So, Anthony, welcome back. How you been since the last time we saw you? I believe it was UFC 239 fight week.
Yeah, then 239 fight week, man. Happy to be back. Always a pleasure chatting with you. We always have a good time when we get to kick it. So it's always fun to talk people getting punched in the face for money with some friends. So let's get the show on the road, my man.
I think we saw each other at the Dominance MMA Media Day, too. That was a good time. You had, I heard, an exhilarating interview with one Mike Tyson, if I remember correctly. Uh-oh.
Oh, yeah. You cut out for just a second there.
Yeah, ain't nothing, man. Yeah, the magic of internet. But I heard, we saw you at the Dominance MMA Media Day. I heard you had an absolutely riveting interview with one Mike Tyson, if I'm not mistaken.
Yeah, I did get to talk to Mike Tyson, man. That was pretty cool. Like that was one of those moments you have to control your inner fanboy.
Right.
And, Mike Tyson blowing weed, smoking my face the whole time. That's a bucket list thing. My dad thought that was really cool.
Did he actually answer your questions?
Yeah, he did. He just didn't really give good answers.
Yeah.
So I'm asking him about a bunch of fights. He's like, yeah, I didn't even get to watch that fight. Like, okay, well, thanks for letting us be here, Mike. And weed smells great. Take care. Yeah,
weed smells great. Take care. But all right, as always, this is the A-Side Live Chat. This is not our podcast. This is your guys' podcast. So leave a question in the comment section of the post. It's been tweeted out. It's stickied at the top of the site. Or you can use hashtag the A-Side on Twitter. Of course, people are probably listening to this after the fact. You can always come and ask questions and then listen to it later on. You can go on Twitter. You can go on the site. It's going to be on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Stitcher, Google Play, all that fun stuff. But Anthony, we're going to get right into it. From Grin N, longtime commenter.
Yes, sir.
What are your thoughts on the upcoming fight between Corey Sandhagen and Frankie Edgar? How do you see this matchup unfolding if Edgar isn't victorious? What does that signal for him and his career? So, yes, Anthony, this week it is official. Frank Edgar will make his long-awaited debut at the 135-pound division against Corey Sandhagen, I believe, at UFC Raleigh, not in the main event, in the co-main event. Couple things to unpack there. I remember when Frankie first dropped down to 145, he immediately fought Jose Aldo right away. And then he came up short, and then he fought Charles Oliveira. And I believe it was the co-main event at UFC 162. That was the Anderson-Chris Weidman, the first one. But now he's dropping down to 135 pounds. There is a lot of high-level marquee bantamweight fights in the pipe war. Coming up, we got Jose Aldo is fighting Marlon Moraes. We got Uriah Faber fighting Peter Yan. Dominic Cruz is floating around out there. Aljamain Sterling just went under the knife. Now Frankie Edgar's there, 135. Henry Cejudo still recovering. But what do you make of Frankie Edgar's future, 135 pounds, his shot against Corey Sandhagen, and what happens if he comes up short? What does that say for the answer's future inside the octagon?
Man, I was definitely surprised by the Corey Sandhagen fight. Like, I like the fight. I think from a technical standpoint, that's a fun fight. That's a fight that I will have a lot of fun trying to dissect and dig into the X's and O's of it. Obviously has a lot of divisional relevance. The only thing that shocked me was that Corey Sandhagen isn't exactly a marquee name.
Right.
Now, while guys like us respect him, the people out there listening in the chat right now, they respect Corey Sandhagen, but he's not a name that strikes some casual interest. Like Frankie might be able to. So I figured the way you framed it leading into the question was perfect. Like when he dropped to 145, his first fight was against Jose Aldo. Like his fight was against the greatest featherweight of all time. And now I would think with that in mind, I would think that they would have given him a more name value guy, which I thought the Aljamain Sterling fight was perfect for that. Aljo just seemed perfect, but obviously, his health issues have delayed that potential matchup. Now, as far as if Frankie doesn't come out victorious, man, I I'm not really sure if we can make a whole lot of it because it would be his first fight at bantamweight. We don't know how his body reacts to that weight cut. We haven't really seen him cut weight before.
Right.
We've seen him just kind of walk in as is. This will be his first time cutting weight. Maybe he needs a second go round to optimize his body in that division. But of course, if he loses, you know, he's not exactly the youngest guy in the world. And he's fighting one of the best in the division. So it might signal the end for Frankie Edgar, but I'd say we still need one more to be for sure on that.
Yeah, like you said, I love this fight. Surprised by the matchmaking, surprised at the cards being placed on, because we do have that big card in January. We have that big card in February. And to put it, I believe it is the Raleigh card, if I'm not mistaken, right? I'm not making that up.
Yeah.
Yeah, we have supposedly that Houston card in February, supposedly have that big Conor McGregor card in January. Maybe Frankie doesn't want to fight on the same card as Conor McGregor if they're not fighting. Who knows? But I love the matchmaking. I've always wanted to see Frankie Edgar versus Dominick Cruz. That's been in the pipe dream of mine ever since they remember they had that champions like gathering. They had all the champions up on stage.
It was
for that International Fight Week before the GSP Shields pay-per-view. And Frankie Edgar and Dominick Cruz were sitting right next to each other. They didn't look that much like Dominick Cruz looked like the same size as him. So I've always wanted that fight. Corey Sandhagen is on record saying like Dominick Cruz is his idol, and he kind of mirrors his fighting style off of Dominick Cruz. So maybe this is the next best thing. I don't know. I wish it was a 5-rounder. Maybe Frankie wants to see how his body reacts to, actually, like you said, this is really the first time we've seen him cut weight. He would just walk into the octagon 155 pounds, cut maybe 8 or 7 pounds to fight at 145, and now he has to actually cut weight at 135. I spoke to him. I don't know if you had a chance to speak to Frankie Edgar at the Dominance MMA Media Day, but I asked him point blank because like,
I got to speak to him there too.
He wants to fight Conor McGregor. That was what he wanted to do at any weight, 155, 145, 170, 165. He wanted to fight Conor McGregor. I asked him, is there a timetable you're going to have? Because if you want to cut to 135, I'm sure you're going to want to actually go through the whole process and not have to bulk up to fight Conor and then immediately cut to 135. And he said his timeline was probably going to be around December, November. We're now pretty deep into November. Thanksgiving is right around the corner. So the announcement doesn't surprise me in terms of when it happens. The opponent surprised me and the card surprised me, but I absolutely love this fight. I want to see how Frankie looks before I can make a prediction on that one.
Yeah, I agree, man. We gotta see something to kind of know what to make of his potential future bantamweight run. So I'm all in, man. This is, like I said, this is a fight for the people who really like fighting.
Right.
This is not just, okay, a sexy name on the billboard. Although the Dominick Cruz fight, that sounds fire right there. I wouldn't mind that one either.
And the fact that the champion, Henry Cejudo, is still on the shelf recovering from, like, I believe it was shoulder or elbow surgery or whatever, and he's traveling all over the world doing fan Q&As, guest fighter spots, this and that. Like I said, I named all those bantamweight fights coming up. Like, if Jose Aldo wins, he said he's going to wait for Henry Cejudo. Frank Edgar wins, you imagine he'd want to fight Henry Cejudo. And then I spoke to Cody Garbrandt at Dominance MMA Media. He wants to come back in March, so then you're going to throw his name into the mix too. Uriah Faber, the bantamweight division is fantastic right now, and the champion is hurt, and there's so many, like, Aljamain Sterling should fight for the championship. Peter Yan should fight for the championship. Jose Aldo. Like, Matt, if Marlon Moraes goes out there and beats Jose Aldo, what happens? He's not fighting Henry again, so we could do a whole episode of the A-side just on the bantamweight division. But of those, all these matchups, this isn't part of the question, but I'm curious to get your take. Of all those matchups I said, which one are you most looking forward to? And if I had to choose one name, if you had to choose one name to fight Henry Cejudo next, who are you choosing?
I got to go Aljo. Aljo I like the technical improvements he's made as of late. I mean, the big knock on him before recently was like, yeah, he could kick, he could wrestle. It was like this weird hybrid style. Right. It was almost reminded me of Phil Davis, kind of the way he would approach a fight. But his hands have looked a lot better lately, a whole lot better. And I'm just very curious to see what his wrestling matches up against Henry Cejudo's wrestling, what that striking looks like, what the physical dimensions of their bodies looks like against one another. Like, Aljo is definitely one of the more athletic guys at bantamweight as well. So I want to see how that plays out against an Olympic caliber athlete. Like, there's so many little things about Aljo versus Cejudo that make it very intriguing to me. And then from a personality standpoint, those they're two probably the most outrageous personalities in the division as well. The buildup of that fight will probably be a lot of fun too.
And let's not forget Rob Font's also fighting Ricky Simone, so there's another bantamweight you can throw into this chaos. I know Aljamain Sterling has always really wanted to fight Cody Garbrandt, like, very badly. I spoke to him backstage in UFC Phoenix. He's like, I don't care if Cody Garbrandt wins or loses. I'm fighting that guy next. So maybe if Cody wants to come back in March, Aljamain's healthy again, and he wants like a three-round fight coming off surgery, maybe we book that fight finally, because like I said, there's so many bantamweight fights all in this two-month span, and maybe Aljamain has fights one more time before fighting for the championship. Don't hate that Cody Garbrandt fight whatsoever. The history is there. They don't seem to really care for each other. Did you speak to Cody at that media day?
No, I didn't. I didn't dig Cody there.
But he seemed much more relaxed and even keeled than angry Cody we've come to know before his fights against CJ DeLoso. So maybe we see a different Cody Garbrandt. Who knows? But again, like I said, we could do a whole episode on the bantamweight division. But we're going to move right along. From longtime commenter Lodovic, few good things from UFC Sao Paulo. I don't even want to think about the whole card, but Charles Oliveira and Randy Brown certainly delivered. Where do you see their positions in their divisions and what's next for them? Thanks as always. So yes, Anthony Walker, I don't know if you saw any of UFC Sao Paulo. It was kind of a grind. It was kind of a grind.
It felt like work. It felt like work for one of the rare times. It was work.
It was work. I can't imagine. This seems to be like, since the ESPN deal kind of came into fruition, there hasn't been a lot of duds, I should say, of pacing. And this feels like it's been going on forever, because you remember the Fox era where cards could take 7 hours long. We didn't get that with ESPN. This card felt like it took forever to finish. And then the main event, there were obviously finishes, but there were also a lot of decisions, like the Jacare and Jan Blachowicz fight and those first few fights on the prelims. But Charles Oliveira submits Jared Flash Gordon. I believe it moves him within one away from tying Cowboy Cerrone for most stoppage wins in the history of the UFC. I believe just Charles Oliveira might have the most submission wins already, like submissions wins in general. Picks up another performance of the night bonus. I believe it's his fifth or sixth win in a row. All stoppages, all bonuses, blah, blah, blah. Randy Brown goes out there. Oh my God. I'm blanking on who he just beat. But wow, this is going to drive me absolutely. Worley Alves? Yeah. He beat Worley Alves, right?
No, that was Krause.
Krause beat
Sergio Moraes. Yeah. They fought over. He already beat him. Yes, it was Worley Alves. Yeah.
Yes. So anyway, he submitted him after. I thought that was a low key, pretty impressive performance. Kind of got not pieced up, but not. He lost the first round. He definitely lost the first round.
Sure.
Came back and submitted Worley Alves in enemy territory. Calls out Michael Chiesa. I don't think he gets that fight. But we'll start with Charles Oliveira. What did you think of his performance? I don't believe Jared Gordon was ranked going into that fight. Like I said, Charles Oliveira is on this very impressive win of stoppages and bonuses, calling for top 15 opponents. He wins. He calls out Conor McGregor. He calls out Khabib. And he calls out Paul Felder, the last man to beat him. What did you make of his performance, and where do you like to see him going forward?
I mean, his performance was excellent. It was absolutely excellent. I really want to see him fight a top 15 guy now. At this point, you have to. Like, he's smashing everybody, and he hasn't seen the second half of the second round in a very long time. Like, he's just bulldozed through his last six opponents, all finishes, the last two being knockouts. You know, you see his hands improving. You see, like, his very well-noted issues on the scale have seemed dissipated. Like, he's making weight consistently. Like, there's really no knock against this guy. There's no reason why he shouldn't be fighting in more high profile matches at this point. You got to give him a top 15 guy. I mean, that you talk about a guy who beforehand, like, you think about the Cowboy Cerrone fight. You think about what's the one where I think it was Cub Swanson, where he took like that body shot and he doubled back and just fell kind of randomly. He had like that weird stoppage against Max Holloway where he got hit in the throat. So you've seen him falter on these odd sequences in striking, and now you see him timing these right hands with expert precision and putting Gordon out. Like, dude, like with the Nick Litz fight, the last one, didn't that finishing sequence start with a head kick? Like
something like that.
Yeah, like you got to give this guy something. Like, you know, he's going to be exciting. You know, he's going to fight for a finish. Kind of a weird dude that's entertaining to just watch. Those glasses look pretty cool. Throw him in there, man. Give him a top 15 guy.
So looking at the lightweight rankings right now, some matchups. Islam Makhachev is out there. Alexander Hernandez is sitting there at 14, 15. Charles Oliveira is 13. Gregor Gillespie's 12. I mean, that's a really fun fight if you like grappling, because I don't think Charles Oliveira has really faced an elite wrestler, and Gregor Gillespie hasn't fought a high-level black belt yet, but I don't think Gregor Gillespie's coming back anytime soon after that head kick knockout to Kevin Lee. Anthony Pettis is now welterweight. Edson Barboza, Ally Quinta, Kevin Lee, Dan Hooker, Felder. I mean, the Felder fight is fun, but Felder probably won't take that. So of all these, and then there's the top five, like Cowboy will probably fight Connor. Gaethje's going to, there's no way he fights Gaethje. And then Ferguson, no. Poirier, Khabib, none of those guys are going to fight Charles Oliveira. So of these names I mentioned, who do you like? I mean, I like the Charles Oliveira, maybe Dan Hooker fight, and that New Zealand card, that Auckland card they just announced. Maybe that'd be a fun one. Kevin Lee, Dan Hooker would be a good one. Ally Aquinta, Charles Oliveira. I like the Gregor Gillespie fight. I just don't think it happens. Kevin Lee said he wants to fight Islam Makhachev in Moscow, of all places, so who knows? But of those names I mentioned, who do you like Charles Oliveira facing?
I kind of like an Edson Barboza fight, mm-hmm. just for the pure style of it. That would just be the weirdest matchup of guys who have wilted under pressure in different circumstances. Just see what would happen. It just seems very combustible. But if we're going to go with the old Joe Silva winner's fight, winner's approach, I'm going to echo the sentiments of my homie Ben Duffy at Sure Dog, who is high on a Kevin fight with Charles Oliveira. So I'll go Kevin Lee. That probably makes the most sense.
I like that fight a lot. I know if Kevin Lee really wants to fight Islam Makhachev just because of the ties to Khabib, maybe I think he's going to want to try and to catapult himself closer to a title fight by beating Khabib's friend and quote-unquote brother. But I'll watch Charles Oliveira fight anyway. I'll watch Charles Oliveira fight a door. I know I use that expression a lot to fight, but exciting cat.
The door on tough.
Yeah, dude, that door stairs, no chances. But another guy that this question asks is Randy Brown, big win over Warley Alvarez. Where do you see him going forward? He called out Michael Chiesa, so he wants to test his jiu-jitsu against Chiesa. I don't think that fight happens. Maybe he could get the winner. I know Vicente Luque's out there. Vicente Luque's coming off that loss to Stephen Thompson. He's sitting at 13. But he wants to take some time off to kind of regroup after that Wonderboy loss. Gilbert Burns really wants a fight. I don't know if you follow him on Twitter. It seems like every card, every injury, anything happens, he's like, I'll do it. So Gilbert Burns versus Randy Brown, just book it. Give them both what they want.
Yeah, just do it, because Gilbert Burns was calling on Francis Ngannou like a couple days ago. So let's just keep Gilbert Burns alive. Let him and Randy Brown fight. I like that a lot.
Yeah, so Gilbert Burns, high-level black belt. Randy Brown wants to test his jiu-jitsu against a high-level black belt. There you go. You're welcome. You're welcome, Sean Shelby and Mick Mahan. We just did your jobs for you. Moving right along. From Eduardo Breno, what's next for Jacare? Should Jacare go back to 185, retire, take another fight at 205? So, as we kind of mentioned in one of the last few questions is Jacare Souza, his fight against Jan Blachowicz, not the most exciting. Not the most. If you're one of those fans that's like, you're the only one in your friend group that really likes MMA, and you invite all your friends over, and they sit down and they watch this fight, and they're like, this is what you like to watch? Just a couple guys pushing each other. I'm sure you've had that experience. I've had that experience. Same thing with boxing. When you watch any Floyd Mayweather fight, people go, this is the best boxer of all time. I'm like, yeah, look, he's not getting hit at all. Like, they just want to see clanging and banging guys inside that ring or octagon. But Jacare came up short, said that any close fight, he's guaranteed he's going to lose, because he never gets the Kevin Gastelum fights up there. Where he came up short. I mean, he lost to Robert Whittaker pretty definitively, lost to Jack Hermanson, and now he loses to Jan Blachowicz in his light heavyweight debut. What did you make of his performance, and what would you like to see Jacare do going forward?
I mean, I don't see any point in going back to 185. Right. I don't really think there's much for him in that division. I mean, at 205, I mean, it's a thin enough division where you might be able to pull a name out. Maybe, you know what? Let's run it back with Luke Rockhold, if Luke Rockhold decides that he wants to keep fighting.
Sure.
You know, that was a great fight in Strikeforce. I don't mind seeing that one again, and it's two guys who probably should be looking toward other avenues to the next chapter in their lives. So, yeah, throw it together. That's fine with me. Maybe even Chris Weidman. Okay.
So just if Just a middleweight fight at light heavyweight?
Yeah, pretty much. That's sort of what I'm thinking of. Like that. I'll put this in proper context because that was a really, really boring fight. And I say that as a guy who is a staunch defender of Woodley Thompson too.
Yeah,
like that was bad. Like that was woefully bad. For Jan Błachowicz, man, what terrible timing to have a fight like that. The performances he's been putting on, the exciting fights, win or lose, that he's been in lately, for him to now get this main event against a marquee name and to fall short in the entertainment department so far and barely win the fight at that. When you're at the end of your career and you're trying to get that John Jones sweepstake money, it's just kind of not the best timing. But for Jacare, yeah, give him a middleweight who's also moving up.
Yeah, I'm just looking at the rankings right now. Jacare Souza sitting there at 15, even though he's 0-1 in the division. The guy right above him, Nikita Krylov, Misha Serkinov, Ilir Latifi is moving up to heavyweight. Johnny Walker's there, so I don't think he'll fight any of those guys. So maybe if they want to just do the obvious Jacare versus Krylov fight, I mean, I'm sure they'll go back to Brazil sometime soon. Maybe they want to go back to Moscow. Maybe Jacare gets tossed or in St. Petersburg, wherever, gets tossed somewhere over there. Who knows? But not the best performance from Jacare Souza, especially because you see a lot of these middleweights going up in weight like the Thiago Santos, Anthony Smiths, these guys that are finding new life at middleweight, and then they go on this run and they get these title shots. But I was speaking with Pete Carroll about this last week with these middleweights going up. It seems like Chris Weidman and Luke Rockhold, when they went up from middleweight to light heavyweight, if they had won, there's no question they would fight John Jones next. There's no question. Right. They both have, Chris Weidman and John Jones have always wanted to fight. Luke Rockhold has the history with DC. He's talking the good talk, and Chris Weidman, same thing. Those two guys lost very violently, like quick. And all week, all the questions were, well, when you win, are you going to fight John Jones? When you win, are you going to fight John Jones? Can you remember anyone asking Anthony Smith or Thiago Santos those questions when they went up to light heavyweight? Because I can't. They went up there with nothing to lose. I believe Thiago Santos, it was a short notice fight, and then he won it so impressively, he just stayed in the division. I can't remember who he beat, but he just went on this tear. He had that crazy Jimmy Manuel fight. He beat Jan Błachowicz. Was it Eric Anders that he pieced up?
Eric Anders. Like it was, and Anthony Smith was a journeyman before going up to light heavyweight. He was a guy who nobody ever really thought of as anything but like a prelim filler. He had like a Phil Stinn at Bellator. Like he just wasn't a guy that anybody was watching, and now, you know, he goes up a weight class and he's something to tangle with.
And those two guys didn't have anything to lose. They went up and no one thought they were going to fight for a title. And all of a sudden they string together a bunch of uber impressive wins and they're fighting for a championship. The opposite was with Luke Rockhold and Weidman, where maybe I can't speak to what they were thinking about. Maybe they did look past their opponents. I know Luke Rockhold looked past Jan Błachowicz because we interviewed him at UFC 239 and he's like, come on guys, I'm fighting Jan Błachowicz. Like, come on. Like, who am I actually? Like, he lost to Thiago Santos, who was a failed middleweight. And then he's calling out Anthony Smith and this and that. And you saw what happened. Got his jaw broken in the second round against Jan Błachowicz, who's not historically a knockout artist. And then Weidman gets KO'd by Dominic Reyes. I don't know what Jacare Souza was thinking. I don't know if you read our piece that our own Guillerme Cruz had, where Jacare was like crying on his way to the gym before his last fight. He felt depression, and he didn't know if he wanted to keep fighting anymore. Like, he felt like the joy of fighting left him, and he was it was before his Hermanson fight, where he would be like driving to the gym and he would have like tears rolling down his cheeks and this and that. And I'm like, when I hear that, I'd never like telling fighters to hang it up, unless it's like after a bunch of crazy KOs. But if you're crying on the way to the gym and you can't get your head on straight when you're about to go fist fight another human being, maybe it is time to hang up the 4-ounce gloves.
Yeah, I think of some of the jobs I've had over the years. And as much as I've hated a lot of them, I was never crying on my way to work. So, Yeah, it might be time to look at the next chapter. Maybe he needs to hit up Luke and see if he can get on a model shoot or something. But he may not want to be in the cage if that's his mentality now.
How old is Jacare Souza? What, 39, 40? He's somewhere.
I think he's 39.
Yeah, so it's not like I'm sure cutting his weight to 185 did not help his future in the UFC, depleting his body like that over and over and over and over. But again, I don't like telling anyone to retire or what to do with their career. But again, if you're crying on your way, someone says, Eduardo Bueno says, I think Robert Whittaker took his soul. Doc says his decline has been obvious for a while now, but in his last two fights, he's looked like a different fighter. No shame in losing to Jack or Jan, but the way he is fighting in those two bouts made me think, what the hell happened to Jacare? He used to be such a vicious killer, and that was dangerous everywhere. It pains me to see him looking washed up like this. I don't know if he's washed up. It was his first fight at 205, and he's fighting a guy that's already in the top five. So again, nothing to hang your head at, but you remember that Chris Weidman fight. He knocks Chris Weidman dead. I mean, people talk about Jacare being this elite jiu-jitsu practitioner, which he is, but he knocked Weidman dead. He knocked out Derek Brunson in that Charlotte card. So I don't disagree. It's very weird to see Jacare having these boring decisions after seeing him just murder people in the octagon and the cage for so long.
But I think it's also, too, important to remember that styles do make fights. And yep. Just the way these two happen to coincide with one another, it just wasn't fun to watch. It just happens like that every so often. And yeah, that's just like, you know, for Jacare to say like he didn't experience the joy in fighting, neither did we Saturday.
So. Cold-blooded.
All right. Yeah, that was pretty mean. I'm sorry, Jack.
Moving along from SJY, longtime commenter. Oh, God. I haven't even read the question, but the subject of this question is electrified fences. So buckle in.
Okay.
Last weekend's main event was a snooze fest. What rule changes could be made to encourage action? I would love to see an electrified fence, but I know that's not going to happen anytime soon. Seriously, other combat sports try to encourage action. EBI has overtime rules. Wrestling has riding time and touch falls. Kickboxing encourages minimum kicks per round. Glory doesn't allow a maintained clinch. Taekwondo has different point system, head kick and body kicks. What are your thoughts? So first of all, no on the electrified fences. I mean, it would be – would it be interesting? Would I watch it? Yes. Would it bring a lot more eyeballs to the UFC? Without a doubt. But again –
those eyeballs would have badges. Like, that's going to get shut down.
So
– the first fight when the first guy – his heart's
– yeah, his heart's – he's going to get like – someone's going to have like a heart problem. He's going to get touched the fence, and then we have our first death inside the octagon. So, no, I don't want to see electrified fences whatsoever. But, Anthony, were there any rule changes that you would want to see in UFC or mixed martial arts in general to counteract these quote-unquote snooze fests, as SJY calls it?
I don't know if it'll be the biggest the biggest medicine for this sort of snooze fest that Jacare and Błachowicz was. But one thing that needs to be eliminated from the rule book, there should not be a such thing as an illegal upkick. That should not exist. If you have your back on the ground, you should be able to kick someone in the face no matter where they are. That's the first rule I'd change.
I don't disagree with you. I thought soccer kicks should be allowed for a long time until I heard someone, what was it compared to? Like, what if you're stuck against the fence? Like, you're pinned against the fence, right. Someone head kicks you, and your head, like, is stuck. Don't like that. I don't personally care, like, stand-ups or whatever. The fact that they exist don't bother me. It's, like, the least of my concerns, but if you can't get a grown man off you, you shouldn't be. You're not going to be champion. If Ben Askren
is literally,
if Ben Askren is just holding you and like making you slap yourself like an older brother, like, and the referees, like, you're just waiting for the referee to stand you up, like, don't. No, that's not a championship mentality. Like, get up. If you can't get up, you're not gonna win. Like, if that fight's in jail, you have a new dad. That's pretty much how it is. I believe that's how Danny Castillo called it when he beat Tony Ferguson. He's like, if that fight was in jail, he'd have a new father right now. I'm like, oh, God, that's a little extreme.
I think the correct term is daddy.
Okay. Thank you. Thank you for that correction. One of the comments in reply says, Pride had ropes, which is pretty good for pushing the action. You couldn't hold your opponent against the fence and didn't want to stay in the ropes because you risked to be accidentally thrown out of the ring. I love watching MMA in the ring, but I like it as an attraction, like in the Ryzen fights where they have like some of the fights are inside the ring. I do love Pride, But I like the Octagon or the Bellator cage or whatever you – or the Combate cage. I can't remember what they called it. But I like the cage better. I love watching MMA in a ring. I love watching kickboxing and Muay Thai in rings, but I don't want MMA in a ring all of the time. I like it as an attraction.
Yeah, I'm with you on that. I think the cage – I mean, maybe it's just more so what we've been conditioned to accept, but I really like seeing a cage. It just feels right, you know, and seeing a ring feels like it feels fun, but it doesn't feel like something that should be the norm. And also too, like the ring, like the, of course you want to keep guys, if you're in the ring, you may not want to hang up by the rope so you don't accidentally get thrown out, but that's a humongous safety hazard for such a dynamic sport. Like it's already dangerous enough. I don't think we need to add the element of falling out. And now the guy who's suggesting the electric fences, he's going to like bring in Art Davies, a moat with the alligators next. Yeah. So if you fall out the ring, you get your arm bitten off. Nah. Let's just, cage is fine. I'm okay with the cage.
One of the comments said, an upkick will lead to someone's nose getting rammed into their brain. Just wait.
Yes. I watched The Last Boy Scout the other day, and yes, totally verified.
Wow. Someone says in Pride you can go down, you get kicks in the head. The soccer stomps were cool looking. I mean, we've all seen those photos and videos of Shogun like jumping up and like double stomping people, like passing guard with foot stomps, or Mark Hunt did his butt drop on Wanderlei Silva, I think it was. So I did ask a lot of fighters at UFC, I want to say 226. I asked every single fighter in media day, like, what rules would you want to bring back? Because this was right around when Stephen Thompson lost to Darren Till and he hurt his knee, and he said he didn't want that that oblique kick to the top of the knee. All of them, Emily Whitmire agreed with Stephen Thompson, but every single fighter says, yeah, just bring everything in. They wanted every single rule allowed. Chuck Liddell wanted knees to grounded opponents. Or knees to the head of grounded opponents. He said that was the big one that really affected his game plan, because he could like take someone down and just just drill their head in with a bunch of knees. BJ Penn, same thing. BJ Penn wasn't a fan of the people putting hands on the ground, and so you couldn't knee them. Which you saw John Dodson do. Yeah. I can't remember which fight, but it was one of the first.
BJ Penn doesn't have too many restrictions when it comes to fighting in general. No, so let's just like not take his word into account.
He does. Khalil Roundtree obviously was like all about soccer kicks if he has a soccer kick win. Even Brad Tavares was like, yeah, soccer kicks should be allowed. And I don't know if you remember, Brad Tavares got knocked. I think it was the Seth Brzezinski fight on Tough. He got like head kicks.
Yeah, yeah.
He won by like DQ. He's like, yeah, of course I want them because I won that fight by DQ. Israel Adesanya was like, absolutely. Even Gokhan Saki was there. He was like, of course, it's a fantastic technique. And if Gokhan Saki is one of the best kickboxers of all time, if he thinks they're good to go, they're good to go. But again, Emily Whitmire, Stephen Thompson, I believe, were the only fighters that didn't want that sidekick. Even Dwayne Ludwig was like, he gets it. He gets Stephen Thompson's argument, but it's a fight. Just don't kill a human being. That's all pretty much everyone was saying.
Like, I remember when John Jones first introduced that to the general MMA world, and I think it was against Rampage. Rampage was saying he's had like permanent knee issues as a result of that fight. And then you remember this? I want to say it was at 239. Was it where was that the Santos or was that 235?
For which one? That Thiago Santos was 239.
Yeah, so remember, I think it was like toward the end of the fourth round or beginning of the fifth, when Jones did like that ridiculous like jumping sidekick aiming right for Santos's knee, and Santos like got out of the way at the last second. Like, that's just evil. That's evil. Legal, but evil.
Especially considering looking at that fight now, Thiago Santos basically blew both of his knees out in the first round, and now he's getting oblique kicked by John Jones. Like, God.
And that, not Jesus. Just oblique kick. Like, that. I mean, that was like Jackie Chan, you know, cinematic style, except I'm going to aim to the knee. So that was me, bro.
Someone in the YouTube comments says, MMA should happen in an empty swimming pool. No, thank you.
Or was the basketball court theory that Joe Rogan wants?
Oh, no, like, doesn't he want it in, like, a football field with no gloves or anything?
Yeah, like, that's something like that, like just some big open field.
Just add weapons. Or what did What did someone at, I remember I was at a press conference and someone was asking all the fighters, like, what would you think of a 10-minute round, like a 10-minute first round, which I like. George St. Pierre was, like, big in favor, and Vanderlei Silva was like, let's just fight to the death. I was like, oh, of course you would. Of course you would say that. But moving along, from Jay's store on the and again, people just tuning in now, you can leave your questions on the site. You can leave your questions in the comment section on the site. You can use hashtag the ASAN on Twitter. I will get to Twitter, I promise. But for now, we're on the site. From Jay's store, are crossover rules the way to market a crossover fight? Interesting. Part of the intrigue with Maymac was whether Mayweather was still had at age 40 after a 2.5-year layoff. Fans seem to accept that MMA fighters will win MMA matches and boxers will win boxing matches. Given recent buzz about crossover fights, is a rules mix-up what these fights need to sell? In my view, the rules don't need to make perfect sense. They just need to give the media and fans something to speculate about before fights. What sort of rule set would you propose for a boxing MMA crossover? Interesting. So I believe this has happened before, isn't it? Didn't Shinya Aoki have a fight like this where he fought like a kickboxer? And I think it was like Dream or Pride. I can't quite remember. But like the first round was kickboxing, and then the second round was grappling.
We've seen like K1 do some things like that, and then also, I mean, really the Ali and Aoki fight was sort of like that, where they took away a lot of rules that we would consider essential. Now, I'm not mad at it, because if we're already getting ridiculous to the point where boxers and MMA fighters are challenging each other every other day in these completely nonsensical matchups, okay, the rules can be not well. Like, all right, whatever. I would say maybe if you take away leg kicks, that would be something that could benefit from. Maybe you take away certain sort of takedowns. Maybe you have limited clinching like K1 might have, where like you're allowed, you know, 3 seconds to throw a knee or something like that, and then the clinch breaks up. You could do things like that to mix it up.
I don't know who would want to do that, though. Like, what? Like, unless you get a crazy amount of money, or you're that. Like,
yeah.
I cannot remember who Inoki fought, but it was like this high level kickboxer. It was like the first round. But then this fight was so fascinating, because the first round was going to be straight kickboxing. And the second round, I believe, was MMA. So in kickboxing, obviously, when you fall, you get separated. So Shinya Aoki was just throwing himself around. Like, he would fall down, so he would, and then the ref would stand it up. And you could see everyone getting pissed, because Aoki's doing his thing as being, like, the bad guy of MMA, where he'd, like, throw a jumping sidekick and then just, like, fall down, or he would, like, trip. So basically, he just did everything he could not to kickbox this guy. And then right away in the second round, he, like, comes out. He's like, I'm going to take this guy down. And the guy just, like, knees him in the face and knocks him dead in, like, the first 30 seconds. So I remember that fight because of that. So maybe we'll get crazy moments like that. But who knows? I would like to see. It's just hard with takedowns, man. Like, you can make just a gentleman's agreement not to do takedowns. But I don't know if there's. Because then if there's no takedowns, it's just kickboxing. You know, maybe you have
Yeah, I mean, maybe you can take away like clinch takedowns, like you know, take out like judo tosses or something.
Yeah,
you know, because that's one of those things where like if you don't know how to break fall, you're getting messed up really bad. Like that's a very painful thing if you don't know how to break fall. So that's something that a striker would benefit from, just knowing that they're not going to get their ribs cracked because they don't know how to slam their arm perfectly perpendicular angle. when they hit the floor,
or you'll knock themselves out like Jared Brooks that knocked himself out against Shorty Torres.
I was also, I think, Ray Maynard knocking himself out also, that was a wrestling takedown. But that's you understand the point there. So I mean I'm okay with it, because it's such a ridiculous situation. It's like we can't have these farcical fights and then get mad at the rule set, and then get mad that something farcical is happening around it, because it is a farce in general. So, all right, go sell it full on, 100% farce. Let's do it.
And didn't Tim Sylvia, and who was it? Who did he? Ray Mercer. That's who it was.
Yeah,
he had that. They had that gentleman's agreement, right, where they weren't going to kick; it was just going to be punching.
And Sylvia broke it in the first 2 seconds and got his head cracked as a result. Yeah.
Oh, God. But I can't think, like, maybe the clinching thing, maybe you could limit number of takedowns. I don't know. It's just hard when you take MMA fighters. Like, I know even Demetrius Johnson said, I'll fight Floyd Mayweather, and I will only punch. I promise you, I will only punch. So, again, I think it's going to have to be a gentleman's agreement type thing. I don't think anyone is going to allow, unless they just make a new hybrid sport. Like, what's that fight that, oh, man, what's that?
Well, like karate combat or something like that? Or
what's going on now? God, it's good. There's, like, headbutts are allowed. He was just
on Lethwei,
yeah. Like, unless you just create your own martial art like that, where headbutts and all that. Like, Seth Brzezinski just lost to, oh my God, I can never pronounce his name, but he just lost. And maybe you just create your own sport, and then that could attract people. But I don't like new rule sets for exhibition fights. Like, if they made Maymac, like, oh, clinching is allowed and punch and elbows are allowed, wouldn't like that. Especially when you have Connor would just destroy. If, like, clinching with elbows was allowed, that fight would have lasted maybe a round, because he would just tear through Floyd Mayweather.
Oh, of course, but, you know, but as far as a gentleman's agreement goes, there's no gentleman when it comes to money. That'd go right out the window with big dollars on the line. So if it's not in the rules, it's not illegal. So, hey, you're going to get that money.
Yeah, you're telling me the winner gets more money, so they make a gentleman's agreement not to kick, and Conor McGregor doesn't just come out there and throw a crazy spinning wheel kick to get on the highlights across the world and make more money? Like, come on, guys. Remember that?
Yeah, so I'm taking a bag.
Remember that whole, like, leading up to Maymac, people were like, I bet Conor throws a wheel kick right away and just misses Mayweather on purpose? I was like, what are you guys talking about? That's not going to happen.
Well, I bet he would have done it, but they put it in the contract that he would lose like $1 million every time he tried something like that. So if something like that isn't in the contract, there's no monetary penalty, why not? You know, you're already dealing with a complete theater of absurdity. So, all right, pull the curtain back. Let's work.
Our own Esterlin corrects me. Lethwei isn't a create-your-own sport. It's a Burmese sport. And I wasn't saying Lithuania was a creative sport. I do want to correct that. It was just like now it seems to be more popular than ever, kind of right now. I didn't want to. I know people in the comment section are going to really come after me. I wasn't saying it was.
Ooh, thank you. Naughty Jose.
I know. People hate me enough already. But I got my crystals here for positive energy, as always.
Hey, don't trust the guy with friendly hair. That's the general rule I have.
I can't wait for UFC 245 fight week. Is it 245? Yeah, Mike Perry's going to be at that media day. It's going to be my first chance to interact with him.
I'm sure he'll love the new color.
I mean, the comment section right now, absolutely. People calling me all sorts of things. But very long question from Marty from Nebraska on the site. It's very long, so I'll try to condense it. The topic is the present and future of Brazilian MMA. Hello, friends. For the last years, we saw the beginning of the end for a whole generation of Brazilian stars. Anderson Silva, the Nogueira brothers, Vanderlei Silva, Vitor Belfort, Lyoto Machida, who just fought, Shogun Hua, Fabricio Verdum, Damian Maia, etc. Some have already left, and the rest of them are one or two fights away from retirement. That's fair, because, like, Machida just fought a good fight. Shogun just fought to a draw. A lot of people thought he won. Maia just submitted Ben Askren and sent him into the retirement. Anderson is still fighting, but I guess the whole, like, he's going on this long tangent of the next generation was hyped so much, didn't deliver, like, Claudio Gadelha, Thomas Almeida, Charles Oliveira, Jorge Alvarez, etc., etc., etc. Don't move the needle, according to Dana White. Johnny Walker, Thiago Santos, Paulo Costa, the only fighters remaining, with some chance of becoming a big star, but I don't see them winning the belt at all. I don't know how far Amanda Nunes can go in terms of star power. The worst is that this is the first time ever that I don't see young prospects inside or outside the UFC. Without results and push from Globo, the interest of MMA is quickly dying in Brazil. The card in Sao Paulo had zero media interest outside of our MMA bubble. Remember Coker making promises about a Bellator card in soccer stadium in Brazil? That is virtually impossible these days. Sorry for the long post, but my question is, what can the UFC do to change the situation? I think they have main event names for one or two more years, like RDA, Junior Dos Santos, Glover Teixeira, Johnny Walker, Thiago Santos, but that's not enough. Maybe they could bring big fights even without Brazilians just to bring more eyes to the sport. Fans booed Jacare Saturday, so they aren't dying for their countrymen like they used to. Fascinating question. I know our own Guilherme Cruz would probably have a better answer to this because he lives down there in Brazil. But outside of he mentioned Charles Oliveira and the next generation being hyped and not delivering. Like, we just had this long question and answer about Charles Oliveira should get a top 15 opponent. He's one of the more exciting fighters in the division. But Johnny Walker stumbled against Corey Anderson. He might have been the next big star of Brazil. Paulo Costa should be fighting for the championship next if he wasn't injured. And Thiago Santos, a lot of people think he beat John Jones 3-2. I get a lot of 1-2-5, I think, is the rounds that they scored for Thiago Santos. But I don't see a lot of these up-and-coming. Amanda Ribas is great. She just had that big win over Mackenzie Dern. Claudia Gadela is still there. It's not like she went away. Can you think of any other names? I can't, off the top of your head, of these Brazilian prospects that we should really be paying attention to down the road?
I can't think of too many. I mean, Johnny Walker was the obvious name, but they just saw what happened with him against Corey Anderson. So we know a certain step up in competition wasn't going to bode well for him at this point. But I can't, and I think that's a big problem. That's a pretty big problem. I mean, there are still some very relevant Brazilian fighters. I mean, outside of the UFC, you've got the Pitbull brothers still doing their thing. Like, Patricio is a dual champion in Bellator.
And let's not forget Douglas Lima.
Douglas Lima as well, yeah. So there are definitely some Brazilian guys out there. But as far as the new ones, I don't know. We just this is a problem when you have oversaturation of cards. When you have a card every week. I mean, this is the first weekend – UFC free week in what, like 12 weeks or something like that?
3 months or something crazy?
Yeah, it's just crazy blitz of UFC action. So when you have this many cards, you don't have the chance to really dwell on a great performance that a young Brazilian fighter put forth. And by the time you get to a Sao Paulo, you've got a pretty watered down card that doesn't really move much interest. So yeah, maybe if you had a few less on the schedule, yeah, maybe you take some of the bigger stars that aren't Brazilian down to Brazil for big fights. I mean, that strategy worked very well at UFC 193 in Australia to bring Ronda Rousey there. So you can try that, and that can boost a little life into the general fan base. But the thing is, like, in Brazil, you know, and please, any Brazilians in the comments, go and correct me if I'm wrong, and Guillermo, tweet me if you think I'm wrong on this one. But MMA seems to be something that's so rooted in their culture due to Brazilian jiu-jitsu. I don't think it's something that's ever really going to go away. Maybe it isn't appointment viewing for everyone like it might have been for like the Anderson versus Vitor fight or something.
Right.
But hey, it's in the fabric of their culture, so it's there to stay.
I've heard that the Reebok deal really did a number for Brazilian fans' interest, because back then, like, you would see all the Brazilian fighters would have their own shirts, so like fans would support that and all. But like, remember Venom and all those the, like, you saw like the Bonisai hats, and like Lyoto Machida would have
Praetorian or something, and
yeah, and then like Lyoto Machida and Shogun would have like Head and Shoulders on their hat. So they were getting sponsored, and they were really getting pushed into the mainstream as these superstar athletes. And then the Reebok deal kind of did away with that, so maybe businesses weren't getting behind them. They couldn't, like, fans couldn't go out and buy, like, oh, I like Anderson Silva, I'm gonna go buy an Anderson Silva shirt now, I'm gonna go buy a Shogun Hua shirt now, and so on and so forth. So I've heard that has kind of, that's done a number on fan interest in MMA down there in Brazil. But like, we're talking about superstars. Like, Chris Cyborg is from Brazil. It's like, yes, she's in Bellator, but, and Amanda Nunes, the greatest female fighter of all time, is Brazilian. She beat Raquel Pennington in Brazil, if I'm not mistaken. I think that was her last fight in Brazil, but she lives in America, and she's on her own social media supporting the U.S. women's soccer team over, like, and Brazil is in the World Cup. So you see these superstars are not even, like, Amanda Nunes was favoring the U.S. women's soccer team over the Brazilian soccer team at times. Probably doesn't look great if you're a Brazilian MMA fan. You see your countrymen supporting another team. But I think you hit the nail on the head where they need to bring a big event. They need to bring a big event that doesn't have Brazilian. Like, say John Jones fought in Brazil, that'd probably be a very big deal. Or like Rose Namajunas went down to defend her championship on enemy soil against Jessica Andrade. But yeah, they need something big. They need another big soccer stadium like that Curitiba show, where Verdum, Stipe, they had Cyborg made her. Was that her UFC debut on that card? Was that her second fight? She fought Leslie Smith at like 140.
I think that was her second fight. I think.
Yeah, and it was like by a cut, and Leslie Smith was not happy. Anderson Silva was supposed to fight Uriah Hall on that card before he had like gallbladder.
Somebody tried surgery to jump Matt Brown or something. Like,
oh yeah, didn't Matt Brown fought Damian Maia, right?
Yeah, he fought Maia on that card.
Did Jacare fight Vitor on that card?
I believe that was the same card.
And then Rob
Font. I believe that was the only like Brazilian versus Brazilian fight on that card, if I'm not mistaken, at least on the main card. Another thing I just thought of too, like what number event was that when Rose lost her title to Andrade?
237.
So I think they made a huge mistake with the way 237 was structured. Why have Anderson Silva fight Jared Cannonier on that card? Like, why not put him in against a name that would have been sexier, that would have attracted more just fun attention? Why have, you know, Jose Aldo in there against a young killer like Volkanovski? Like, when you bring the Brazilian stars to Brazil to die in front of everyone, that's a good way to just stab yourself in the foot. Or shoot yourself in the foot.
Sure.
Whatever the phrase goes.
Hey, talking about light heavyweights, Chris Weidman versus Anderson Silva 3. Let's run it. Do it a third time. Why not make that? Like, the second fight was wonky at the end. Yeah, he won fair and square, but... Anderson Silva, Chris Weidman 3. Let's book it. But I do think they need one of two things. They need a crazy big stadium show that filled with all their superstars. They need, and Crone Gracie needs to be on that card. Guilherme Cruz is like, he needs to fight in Brazil. Like, he wants that. Like, imagine a Gracie, like, direct, like Hickson's son fighting in Brazil again. Has to happen. They need a big stadium card, fill it up with all their Brazilian stars, throw Crone Gracie on there. Or they need to bring like a John Jones or an Israel Adesanya or someone like that down to Brazil to really drum up interest for that market, because like this commenter said, the interest in Sao Paulo apparently wasn't that big for non MMA media, but
it was a bad card anyway. So
wasn't that big for American audiences either.
No, certainly not. That was not a good card even on paper. It just wasn't really much there, so no shock that only the MMA media cared, and the MMA media barely cared about it.
So. Well, Guilherme Cruz did fantastic work down there, so you can go check out all of his stuff on our site and the YouTube channel. He got interviews with all the English speakers, and then had a lot of great write-ups with his fellow Brazilians who didn't have translators there, so highly recommends checking out his work. But hopping over to Twitter, from Gabriel Arnotovich, I apologize if I mispronounced your name. Hashtag the A-side. You can use that on Twitter. With the welterweight title fight happening just a few weeks away, have we heard any news on Tyrone Woodley? Seems like since he lost, all talks of him have gone ghost. Well, first of all, it's Tyron. There's no E at the end of Tyrone Woodley's first name. But last I heard, wasn't Leon Edwards hinting at they offered him a fight against Tyrone Woodley in the co-main event of that January card?
Yeah, that's what I was hearing. I've heard from someone who had a little knowledge inside of Edwards' camp that was being discussed. So, I like that fight.
I like that fight a ton. I know PT Carroll and I talk about that fight a lot as a fight we really want to see. There's a big UFC London card coming up from what I hear. Rob Whittaker and Darren Till supposedly have agreed to terms via Twitter. They both want to fight on that card. Leon Edwards needs... he's like the man lost in all of this. Like, he's on this super impressive win streak. I believe the last person he lost to is Kamaru Usman. He just beat RDA in his first main event. He's beating Gunnar Nelson, Cowboy Cerrone. He's beating guys that are impressively. And I believe he calls himself like Left Elbow Larry, named after Michael Bisping, because he dominates in the clinch with that left elbow. He needs a card that can get him attention. So if they want to throw him on that London card, give him a big name. I know a lot of people are going to watch Darren Till and Robert Whittaker fight, so maybe he gets some of the fallout. If you throw him in Tyron Woodley against Leon Edwards in the co-main event on that Conor McGregor card, perfect. I like that fight in general. I like how it's a three-round fight. It's a great co-main event for that Conor McGregor fight, because if there's a championship, I doubt they're going to put a championship fight on that card, especially because, like, how can you justify Conor coming off a loss headlining over a title, if that makes sense?
Right.
So Leon Edwards versus Tyron Woodley, I think, is an awesome co-main event for that fight card.
Yeah, and for a co-main event for that Conor card, it makes a lot of sense, because if you can't have a champion in the co-main, and make it justifiable, oh, we'll put a guy who just lost his belt in there against a guy who should be fighting for a title right now. So that just makes all the sense in the world. And then also, too, from the UFC standpoint, Leon Edwards and Tyron Woodley aren't exactly the guys that the promotion tends to favor.
Right.
So this is kind of a way that they can kind of kind of kill off, you know, someone that they're that isn't exactly always in their good graces. So makes sense on a lot of different angles.
And then other than that, like the welterweight, like we talked about the welterweight division earlier, but I think that BMF championship kind of, I love that fight. Wasn't exactly what the UFC needed in terms of like rankings and stuff, because Masvidal doesn't care. He just wants to fight the guy with the most numbers. Like I thought before that Nate Diaz fight happened, I thought Masvidal Leon Edwards was a great co-main event for Colby versus Kamaru. And then the winner would fight, the winners of those two would then fight each other for the UFC welterweight championship of the world. But then when Nate Diaz called out Jorge Masvidal at UFC 241, I was like, all right, that's the fight. Like, I don't care. Like, I love Leon Edwards, but that's the fight. Like, Jorge Masvidal should not be fighting Leon Edwards, or now he should be fighting Nate Diaz. And then we see that fight happen, and now we might get Nick Diaz fighting Jorge Masvidal. I'm sorry, Leon Edwards. I'm one of your biggest advocates, but you missed the boat on Jorge Masvidal. I bet the winner of the Usman Covington will probably fight Masvidal or Diaz next, whoever. So if Nick Diaz goes out there and beats Jorge Masvidal, like, how are you not going to give him a titles fight? You know,
you kind of have to at that point, but that fight shouldn't happen anyway. That fight should not really happen. I'm just not I don't want to see Nick Diaz fight right now. I really don't. You know, we've heard things about him. And his physical condition over the years doesn't sound like a guy who needs to be jumping into a cage right now. Just doesn't. And that interview he did just didn't do anything to assuage any of those concerns. So I'm okay with Nick Diaz not fighting right now, especially when Masvidal should be fighting for the welterweight title at this point. Mm-hmm. He should be aim for that. If you're Masvidal, in my opinion, because you're going to get the big money regardless.
I agree, but if he wants that big money, that Nick Diaz fight is there. Nick Diaz takes like a year to get in shape, get his life together, and all that stuff. Masvidal, I don't know if you saw, remember he said he needed to get his hands checked out.
Yeah, his hands were messed up.
So
yeah.
Both of them.
But I mean, a year? Whew.
Well, if Masvidal's on the shelf recovering his hands and the timetable is there, make that fight. I want that fight so badly.
Okay, I mean, yeah. If you're giving Nick the proper time to kind of get himself together, then all right. I'm not as opposed to it. And if it takes a year, like, all right.
And then co-main event: Dustin Poirier, Nate Diaz. Big brothers on the card, teammates on the card. I mean, we put that graphic out there on MMA Fighting, and I immediately wrote like, "Shut up and take my money." That's a card that doesn't need a title involved. Like, yes, the BMF Championship of the World is there, but Masvidal has already said #1 of 1, so he's not giving that belt up for no one. So the Diaz
They'll just make another one. Don't get it twisted, man. Another belt will be trotted out there, and it instead of The Rock, it'll be like Ben Affleck or something who's going to hand it out. It's going to be something. All right, Mike can do it. Samuel Jackson.
Ooh, well, Masvidal said that he would get the meanest fighter belt, like the MMF title. I like that one. But we're running up on time, so we got a few random questions. PECs from Black Aces: with a rising use and undeniable performance enhancing obtained from using crystals, should a new USADA organization be built in order to ensure fighters' safety and keep this sport and MMA clean? So yes, no, they should not, because the power of crystals will never live on forever.
You know what? I heard a rumor, man. Tell me if this is true or not. Supposedly, you were supposed to fight on the undercard of the Schmo versus Hawani, but USADA said the crystals no good.
Yeah, that wouldn't be fair. I'm not gonna lie. Me and I don't know if you've watched the show in recent years, but we kind of have Captain Crystal, aka Jared Cannonier. We're just waiting for him to get on the show. I don't know if you saw that interview after he beat Jack Hermanson. He was wearing a crystal around his neck, and Tyron Woodley's like, "What you got going on there?" He's like, "Oh, this is my pyrite. It wards off negative energy, and it really helps me like train and this and that." And then you go on his Instagram, he's like sponsored by crystals. And since then, like, Mack Wondemaricani was wearing a crystal at UFC 244 fight week. Jairzinho, after the fight, after he beat Andre Arlovski, he had a crystal around his neck. He goes, "Oh, maybe it's good luck. I don't know." So, no, they shouldn't be banned, because the power of crystals will live on forever. Now people are sending us crystals. They're tweeting at me about crystals. Longtime listener Jessica on Twitter does a weekly breakdown before fights of, like, these are the crystals that every single fight. So, no, don't ban them, because they will live on forever. One final question. I've been waiting for this. Go ahead. You have anything to add to our crystal talk?
I was just gonna say, like I'm out here doing the wrong thing. And instead of looking for the heart shaped herb, I should be looking for crystals. Appreciate that one.
You're not wrong. And if Pete Zicarelli was here, he'd be all about this conversation right now. But last question, I want to end on kind of a fun note from Hefe01. MMA fighting staff actually doing MMA fighting. With Jose Crystals Youngs repeatedly threatening to fly over to Ireland and fight Pete Scissors Carroll, it got me thinking. With current and former MMAfighting.com staff, including Luke Thomas, Ariel, etc., who would be above 500 and who would be below 500 in a round-robin openweight tournament with current and former staff? Well, I would be far below 500. And if I had to put my money on who would probably come out on top, it'd be Casey, a cameraman, because that dude trains like five times a day. Doing all like cardio, jiu-jitsu, kickboxing, Muay Thai. So he'd be way up there. If you ever see him like around during fight week and he's not doing anything, he's usually sitting there shadow boxing anyway. Sometimes he comes up and just knees me in the ribs. It's not a fun time. Luke Thomas, that dude is huge, and he's super into powerlifting and jiu-jitsu and everything. So I'd probably put my money on those two. Sean Alshadi does jiu-jitsu. I've seen him do it a few times. He'd be way up there. Mark, as AK Lee calls him, he calls him the Stone Pit Bull of the MMA media. I don't know if you know Ishii from New Japan Pro Wrestling. He's kind of like compact and built with like no neck and everything. Yeah. So he could surprise some people maybe, but I would be far below. Danny Segura has been doing boxing for a while now. I'm sure he would do great, but I'd be there in spirit handing out, like, you know how moms hand out the orange peels after soccer games? I would just be handing out like orange peels and crystals to everyone, being like, good job, Luke. Good job, Casey. Way to kick that man's head off. I doubt Chuck Mendenhall would do anything. I don't know how Ariel would do. Doesn't seem like much of a fighter, but rest assured, I would do terribly. And our new videographer, Alex Savas, would probably kick my ass anyway. So there you go. But anyway, as always, this has been the A-Side Live Chat. And as Anthony Walker knows, at the end of the show, you get to plug a little promo. You get to plug anything you want. Talk about fighting. Talk about crystals. Last week, it was my mom's birthday, so that was my promo. But, Anthony, the floor is yours. Whatever you want to talk about.
All right, cool. Well, you can follow me on Twitter at AntWalkerMMA. The Walkout Network, my YouTube channel. Check that out. You can find my work on SureDog.com. Got some good work on MMA on Point as well, that YouTube channel. But this weekend is my baby shower. My son will be born at the end of the year. And wow, having congrats. A baby shower. And, wish me luck. Pray that I don't pass out, because I'm scared as hell.
Sounds like you need some crystals in your life, my friend.
I need some crystals, man. I'm still looking for that heart-shaped herb, though.
Jessica, send Anthony some crystals to relieve stress in times of his baby being born. She listens every week, and she's got your back.
Thank you, Jessica.
For my promo, why all the hate on Dragon Ball Z all of a sudden? Because I'll give you a second there, Anthony. You okay?
I'm good, man. I just didn't expect that. I'm good.
Israel Adesanya was on Ariel Helwani's show and said, "What during his dance he pulled his spirit bomb out of the sky." And in my mind, I was like, And then he also did the Death Note where he wrote Robert Whittaker's name in the book. Of course, you're obviously a huge anime fan, so you know all of this. I don't have to explain it to you, Anthony Walker. But John Jones then comments on the post saying, "This is a 30-year-old dude pulling energy from his favorite TV show. I can't wait to fight this guy." And I'm just like, man, haters. Just haters is hating on all the things I enjoy, like crystals and anime. Ow, I sound like a weirdo right now. And then all of a sudden I see on Twitter, all of these fans are split down the middle, like, yeah, John Jones, go beat that weeb's ass. And then everyone's like, why is everyone hating on Goku? And even Bobby Green is commenting, like, Super Saiyans always win. Roxanne Modafari, who's always wears the Saiyan wigs, is jumping into it. Alex Sarah's big Naruto fan. So let's just all let everyone enjoy what they enjoy. If you don't like anime, you don't have to. Israel Adesanya wants to pretend he's pulling a spirit bomb down a la Goku in Dragon Ball Z or Dragon Ball. Let him do it. Let's just all coexist and watch what we like. And that was my promo. But for Jose, that's been Anthony. I'm sure he's going to be, actually, I know he's going to be on down the line. I'm sure I always like talking with him. I hope to see him at a future event. Who knows? Maybe we'll do another extra live A-side, as Esther calls it. But this will be up on Stitcher, Spotify, Google Play, Apple Podcasts. It's still on YouTube. It'll be on Megaphone. Thanks for stopping by, Anthony. I always enjoy talking MMA with you. I thought you had great insight. I liked your little plug on Aljamain Sterling quite a bit. But for this episode of the A-side, we're out.